Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
A moment of business before we get into today's show. Surf Splendor is completely free, but you can support the show, and we need your support to help grow the show organically. Do so by sharing the show with a friend. Tell them verbally, send them a link to our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com, or promote it via social media where you can find us, at Surf Splendor. Thanks in advance, and enjoy today's show. Welcome to Surf Splendor. It's Monday, October 21st, 2013. I'm your host, David Scales. Today we have an episode of Surf News with Scott Bass. But before we get into it, I'm going to play a conversation that I had last week with a guy named Timothy Hogan. Tim is a surfer and commercial photographer. You may have seen some of his work. Most recently, there's billboards and print ads for Beats by Dre headphones, and a Budweiser campaign for their new Black Crown beer. Those images were taken by Timothy. He began a passion project over a year ago, photographing surfboard fins. The series is just surfboard fins, beautifully lit, white background, simple and beautiful. Through the course of the year, Timothy has met a lot of shapers of these iconic surfboards and the designers of their fins, and it has inspired him to capture their stories. He has begun the process of producing a documentary called The Fin Project, and he is in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign to fund the project. Here's my conversation with Timothy Hogan.
It came about because I was desperately looking for something to that was a little bit more soulful than the photographic work that I was doing. Doing a lot of advertising work, it's a lot of really high energy. It takes a lot of energy, but it wasn't very fulfilling for me from a artistic
sure.
perspective.
Sure.
And I wanted something that I can really combine and do something with surfing and do something that mattered to me, you know, both personally that I was just into and that I loved, you know, geeking out on. And as tiring as this project is, and trust me, it is, it's also, you know, I think it's a net gain of energy than a loss.
Nice.
Then you know, that so many times with the commercial work that I've been doing, it's like you get done and you're just done.
Sure.
And you got nothing left. And this is kind of like, yeah, okay, I'm exhausted and, you know, we've been going like lunatics, but it's fun. And I get to do things like this and meet cool people and talk about stuff I'm super interested in. So that gives me energy. You know, I'm just doing, it's just a story that I saw and a story that I felt hadn't been given really the time of day. And
well, that's a perfect segue to my second question, yeah. Which is you wanted a passion project to kind of devote time and energy to. Why the fin?
Somehow there had always been this fascination with the form. I'm a real kind of like lines, objects, graphics guy, just based that I'm a still life photographer. It was one of those things that was always in the back of my mind. You know, it was always something that just appealed to me from a graphic standpoint. And then when I started getting into the stories behind it, and you know, the huge amount of different designs and stuff, it just kind of kept going from there. And as somebody who's into like lines and graphic forms and shapes and stories that those shapes can tell, it's like a gold mine. Every time I pick up a new fin, it's a new story. And what matters to me now is stories and about telling those stories. And part of the photograph, purpose for the photographs now is to tell the story, is to kind of like let people tell their own stories about the objects. Look at a Greenow knee board and kind of, you know, let them think, oh, I wonder what George was thinking, or I wonder what waves this board has seen, or whatever. So that's the kind of like the viewer's story on that object. And then for the people behind it, it's just telling their story and getting into how they, not only how they came up with the design, but just they're kind of like their inventor personalities in general are, there's a thing called inventor's mind, which is just that constant questioning and that constant kind of looking at things and trying to do things differently and not really following the path that everyone else tells you have to. It's just that constant innovation. And I think I can, you know, I identify with that a little bit, but I also am really intrigued by it and intrigued by people like Greenow who have just done their own thing and gone to their own drummer and done amazing, amazing things, created amazing things. The film's not about proving who was first or second or giving credit or being like, no, this is the rightful owner of this title. I think the film is about the personalities and why people chose to think differently and why people chose to kind of live this life of questioning and passion, and whether it's motivated to just ride waves by yourself like George, or win contests like Anderson. It's like, how do those relate to one another? Sure. Why are they the same and what are the differences? But they obviously each have accomplished a great deal.
Well, who are some of the personalities that you'll be profiling?
So the way that it started out, the doc started out was like, I started to look at the eras in surfing, and each of the eras really was precipitated by a major change in the way that people thought about fins. So those kind of like five people are Blake, Simmons, Greenow, Campbell Brothers, Mark Richards, Simon Anderson. Those are like the ones where that was the paradigm shift to the next era, whether it was twin fin era or whatever. That's, you know, putting the first fin on a board, fins going to the edges and working with hydrodynamic principles, you know, but there's tons of other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there's,
you gotta,
I could make a mini series.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a profile once a week for the rest of who knows long about everyone. So I'm not saying in any way that it's only these guys and that's it, because there's tons of other people we're going to be talking with. I want to talk with Derek Hind about, you know, his theories and the friction list. And that's an important part of the conversation about, you know, performance. And because I really want to, through interviewing those guys and through kind of like these profiles, I want to try and ask, like, you know, what's the next step? Like, where's the next thing going to come
design
from?
Evolution.
And is it a design evolution? Is it a material thing? Is it something completely different, or are we just going to be rehashing something that has kind of been forgotten?
Yeah.
You know, but I find it hard to believe that, you know, obviously huge amounts of credit to Simon Anderson and everybody with the thruster, but I find it hard to believe that the thruster is as far as we're going to go.
I then asked Timothy about the process of crowdfunding and using Kickstarter to have fans invest in the project.
It's really important that the industry gets behind it and that people talk about it and do what they can. Obviously, if people can contribute, great. I know not everybody can.
Right.
It's more from a talking about it perspective and a spreading the stoke for it perspective that I want to get people involved. Every tweet, every post, every mention, it all goes to build, you know, excitement and enthusiasm and support, you know. If we don't meet the goal, everybody gets their money back and we go back to square one.
Okay.
I don't want that to happen.
Of course, yeah.
We're gonna make the film either, you know, it's gonna get made.
Yeah.
It might change, you know, change shape. It has to fit in line with the quality of the picture. So I want it to have a really high production value. And that's just where my aesthetic goes. It's a very simple but very kind of like elegant production value. It's not gonna be shot with DSLRs and stuff. It's gonna be shot properly.
Yeah.
You know, pro cinematographers, you know, really nicely done.
The link to the Finn Project's website and Kickstarter campaign is on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com. Here's what you can look forward to next week on Surf Splendor. Then we'll go straight into surf news with Scott Bass, and then I'll be back at the end to close out the show. Thanks for listening. Next time, on an all-new episode of Surf Splendor, we hear one South African surfing legend's thoughts on the modern surf industry.
And when I look at the media and I see these magazines shrinking, I see the surf industry shrinking, I see revenue dropping, I just go, well, why have they become so myopic? Why are they speaking to one tiny component of the culture? You know what's happened? Is artifice has replaced art. Derivation has replaced inspiration.
And how the ups and downs of surfing prepares you for life's challenges.
How cool is this? Adriana D'Souza is giving this old bastard some advice. I love them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm saying that I'm a super stoked guy. I love my surfing experience. I love surfing when it's 3 foot. I love surfing when it's 10 feet. And as surfers, we are so lucky that we have that opportunity to continually push ourselves throughout our surfing lives.
It's a candid conversation with Sean Thompson about his new book, The Code, next time on an all-new Surf Splendor.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, down the line, Surf Talk Radio and the Surf Splendor Podcast. Joining forces again this week, I am Scott Bass along with
David Scales from Surf Splendor Podcast.
And David, what's the date today?
The date is October 21st, 2013. It is a Monday at around 11 a.m. Southern California.
Yeah, good to see you again, and thanks for meeting me halfway here. These podcasts seem to be going well. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback. I wanted to read a couple of quick emails if I could.
Please, man, boost my ego.
Yeah, let's see here. Scott, listen to your Allman Brothers surf video podcast. For me, it's hard to resist the music from the 80s and the early 90s. Surf movies that I grew up on had great music. The old Billabong movies were great, and a few of my favorite tunes include Bittersweet by the Hoodoo Gurus and This Must Be the Place by the Talking Heads. The winner for me, though, might just be Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall. You might remember it from the Quicksilver Performers movie. And that email comes from David Price. And then this one real quick, David. Gentlemen, a quick and bit overdue email just to say how much I enjoyed the combo podcast you put together. Scott, we've exchanged email a couple of times, and I hope you know how much I've enjoyed and continue to enjoy down the line over the years. David, it was great to be introduced to Surf Splendor. I've since listened to all the episodes. Both of you are providing me with something I really yearn for, which is surf stoke during long and landlocked work weeks. It's my hope that you both keep forging ahead in the podcast world. Whether you combine forces in the future or continue to pursue your individual efforts, rest assured I'll be there listening to whatever it is you both have to offer. So thank you most sincerely, Eric Quick. So Eric, thank you for that.
It's cool. You just do these things, especially with the internet, and then put it out into oblivion. And you can see numbers. You know people are paying attention, but it's nice to hear feedback that they actually, you know, are listening. And
yeah.
That they care.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is. It's great to get feedback like that. And I'm glad that some people, at least Eric and my wife and your wife, are we think listening and enjoying our podcast. So
Do
you want me to just start it off here?
Launch into it, man.
All right. Kai Otten, maiden victory at the Rip Curl Pro in Portugal. The Rip Curl Pro, of course, was at Super Tubes. It finished last week, and Kai Otten won the event in the process, beating John Florence, Mick Fanning, and Parco on his way to that victory. That is a great win and some great surfers that Kai Otten took down. Will this be Kai Otten's finest moment on tour?
Yes, it will be. I think he may have another final or two in him, but his surfing just simply isn't as polished, confident, or well-rounded as the guys that he beat, actually, making his way to the final. I think his Kai Otten strengths are tube riding, wave selection, and his undying determination to win. You know, that's been seen time and time again. He won me over. I've never been a huge fan just because his surfing isn't exciting, but he won me over in round four in France, where he had a heat against Tajboro and Parco, and they had him comboed. About midway through the heat, he got a 9.77, which got him out of combo, but he still needed a 9-something. Both the other guys had 9s. They had like 18-point totals. And with 44 seconds left, Kai held Parco off position, and he got a 9.4. And came out claiming the thing, tipped over. He got the score that he needed and advanced past two guys who anybody would have bet would have beaten him. So I became, you know, I was endeared to Kai with that performance. In Portugal, however, I never felt like he did anything that was spectacular. And in fact, reviewing the event, his highest heat total was against Parco in semifinal one, and it was only 14.83. So I don't think you should be advancing through world title heats with a 14.83. And again, that was his best score. So the waves were, you know, marginal at best, but there were a lot of other performances through the event where guys were getting 17-point totals, you know? So he did have a tough draw, and but he never really showed the type of surfing that his opponents did in their other heats. You know, like, he did beat Parco, but Parco's other heats would have smoked Kai in any situation. Mick's other heats would have smoked Kai. John's other heats, they all scored higher. So I'm glad for him. Everybody likes an underdog. I'm glad the title will be decided in Hawaii, but I do think this will be Kai's only win on tour, and I think that this will probably be the only year that he finishes in the top 10. What about you?
Yeah, you sort of stole my thunder. No, that's okay. You know what? This will be Kai's finest moment on tour. If it is not, if we are both wrong, I won't be sorry for that. I hope he does something great But I would agree with you. To me, Kai's sort of falls in that, you know, middle rung of pro surfers where it's sort of like mix them, match them. Yeah. You know, they're a little bit vanilla. He's not in the top 10 in my eyes. And although a good guy, a great bloke, whatever, you know, there's a million good guys, a million good blokes. You're one of them. I'm one of them. Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, yes. Woody Kai Otten's finest moment on tour has happened, and I don't foresee him ever winning another event.
For you, who do you feel was the performer of the event?
You know, I didn't watch too much of it. I was sort of underwhelmed by the event. You know, the big gap in the lay days. And I'm going to have to hold judgment on that until I think about it a little more.
Yeah, sure. Julian Wilson was the guy for me. Obviously, there was that huge alley-oop. But just heat by heat, he was getting tubed, doing massive airs, and doing big wraps and carves. Surprisingly, I think that Matt Wilkinson deserves an honorable mention. I feel like once a year, he brings it at an event, and it's really nice to see because, you know, obviously he rips, but it's just... he doesn't present it all that often. Last year, I think it was in the Coldwater Classic. He made the final with Taj. But, yeah, I mean, he got a couple nine-point barrels out there. And, of course, his wetsuits are always worth the price of admission, you know?
Yeah, my thing with Wilco, I struggle. I always put him on my team and then take him off of my fantasy surfer team. And I think to myself, okay, Wilco, this guy just it looks to me like he likes to party. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, he's going to France. You know what? He's probably going to have a few hard nights in France.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to put him on my team. Goes to Portugal. I think the same thing. And I found myself thinking, and I don't have any facts to back this up other than he's this sort of like happy-go-lucky guy that you just get the feeling that, you know, he's in his mid-20s or whatever and he's on tour and he looks like he likes to have a good time. So he's like the party guy on tour. Again, yeah. I'm just assuming this. I don't know that he is. But I have a hard time putting him on my fantasy team because it seems like everywhere he goes, I say to myself, yeah, he's probably going to have a couple of hard nights. So
right.
I'm not going to put him on the team. And then there are those moments, you know, one or two events each year where you're like, wow, the guy's on fire. Usually at the beginning of the season, I'll put him on, you know, because I feel like, okay, you know, maybe he's got that fresh start mentality and he's ready to take it serious this time. But we'll see.
I don't have the standings with me, but I don't think he's re-qualifying next year.
Ah,
so
that's interesting.
Yeah, so maybe we won't see him.
Well, that's a great segue to the world title situation because entering the final stop here of this 2013 ASP World Championship Tour, Mick Fanning and Kelly Slater remain in contention for the world title. Now, David, following Fanning's fifth place at the Rip Curl Pro Portugal, that's not right, is it? Fanning didn't get a fifth place, did he?
Yes, he did.
Okay. So Slater has to win the Pipe Masters to surpass Fanning for the ASP World title. And if Slater is to win this event, the Pipe Masters, Fanning must place third or better to claim the title for himself. So my question to you, understanding this situation, will Slater win Pipeline and claim his 12th world title by Fanning not placing better than third?
The answer is no. I hate to say that. I love when it gets this kind of exciting and I want Slater to win and we've seen him do it before, probably in more dire circumstance, but the cards are just, the statistics don't favor Kelly. You know, what you just said was that Kelly needs to win the event and Fanning needs to not make the semis, essentially. Can Kelly win the event? Yeah, he can, but nowadays, there's so many guys who are good at pipe. John Florence, Parco now has proven himself there. Josh Kerr's proven himself there. Jeremy Flores, not to mention all the wild cards. And then that's completely ignoring Mick Fanning and the tear that he's on. You know what I mean? So if Fanning was out of the equation, like wasn't surfing the event for some reason, could Kelly do it? I don't know. That'd be a gamble to bet on him. Yes, he can, but it'd be a gamble to bet on. You add Parka or Mick to the equation, and he has willpower alone enough to make the semis. He certainly has the talent to do it, and he's on the biggest roll we've seen him on since he won world titles previously. So I could see them both being in the final series maybe, but Kelly besting him in that scenario, I don't know. I wouldn't bet on it. I'm betting on Mick.
Fair enough. I think that Kelly Slater will win pipe and that Mick will not do enough and that Kelly Slater will go on to win his 12th world title.
You want to bet a beer on it?
I will bet you an iced tea.
Fair enough. Yerba mate.
Yeah, I'll have a yerba mate bet on this. And a part of my thinking on this is that Kelly, he seems to do his best when he sort of doesn't care anymore. And this sort of segues into something else that we're going to talk about. But I get the feeling that Kelly's sort of lacking motivation after the sort of sour note that he went out on in Portugal, the bad waves, the long lay days, he sort of had a I don't give a crap sort of mojo about him after the event. And he's really dangerous when he's in that space because when he doesn't care, when there's really no pressure on him at all, he seems to shine. And a lot of times he'll go into events, it's my assumption that he goes into events kind of going, you know what? Whatever happens, happens. I'm cool. I'm good with it. I've got 11 titles. That's when all of a sudden, after the first seat, he's like, wow, I love this. I have no pressure. I'm surfing the best I've ever surfed. And he goes on his own little mini tear through the event. And I anticipate that happening again.
Well, I would have expected that to happen in Portugal. Why didn't it happen there?
I'm suggesting that he felt pressure. That he's like, I'm still in this thing. I've got to fend off Fanning and Parker. Whereas now he's kind of like, you know what? It's all good. Plus, I have a mini conspiracy theory, which is that he's in line to take over Kieran Perreault's job as the commissioner. And it's hard to do that. This sort of goes against what I said earlier.
Sure.
But it's hard to take over the commissioner's role if you're the defending world champion. So if that, in fact, that position is his to take, which I believe it is, will he take that? And will he just go out on a high note and be the defending champion and not defend his crown in 2014? That's my conspiracy that perhaps he's all lined up to take that job.
What if the waves suck at pipe? What happens then?
that's a segue into a whole nother thing. Let me stop segue in.
Okay, but before you segue away, I got more to say.
Okay.
Well, were you going to segue into...
I'm going to segue all over. I got so many segues, dude. You don't even know. Let me segue into the state of Kelly since we're talking about
that. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Kelly lost his round two heat, as I mentioned, as you know. Portugal slop. Afterwards, he seemed disinterested.
Right.
Perhaps ready for a break. Will Slater retire after this Hawaiian season?
Yeah, that's kind of the segue I was going to take too because I've never seen... I don't know that I have ever seen Kelly that apathetic. In the middle of a world title race. You may be apathetic after losing a title race or being so far ahead, you know, but in the midst of it, he really didn't seem to care. It was after a heat loss, of course, so that event was over, but the world title race was still on. The lack of preparation also was something that really surprised me. Like, he was riding the wrong board by everybody's estimation, probably even his own. It was a quad. Everybody commented that Mick is the first guy in the water in the morning before the sun's up, even if he doesn't have a heat, even if it's a lay day, and the last guy out of the water at night. Kelly, on the other hand, shows up late to the event, to the contest site, like, and shows up just before his heat, having had a free surf. So he admitted, actually, that he was that he didn't have a game plan. And one of the quotes was that he said was, I'm not inspired by the surf in the last three events. He also said, I'm sort of glad it's over. He was probably referring to the heat, not the title race. He also said, I don't know if I'll watch much, referring to the rest of the event. That doesn't sound like somebody who's engaged. And then he also said about that heat, with 5 or 10 minutes left, I had already given up. With 20 years on tour, it's hard to get motivated for waves like this. Mick is super motivated. Is all that a ruse and he's trying to let people think that he's not interested? To me, it seems sincere. And I, again, haven't seen him that apathetic ever that I can remember.
Yeah, a couple of things. Kelly, again, I don't know all of Kelly's movings about what he does before and after each event or each heat or whatever. I do recall, and I have read, and from what I know of Kelly, just through the media and stuff, he always sort of shows up late.
Right.
And I don't think that, I think I think he's generally, just because he's not in the water at dawn, doesn't mean he's not ready for the heat. I'm sure Mick is, you know, but I think to sort of make that leap, you know, that just because he's not in the water, he's not ready. I think he's ready to go. Now, in crap, I think the big factor here is what you mentioned is the crappy waves. The waves are crappy.
Yeah.
And at some point he's like, dude, this is Huntington Beach. Are you kidding me? You know, what happened to the Dream Tour? You know, like you would think with just two events left, you know, we would have some great surf.
Yeah.
And we're anticipating great surf and pipes. So, you know, you mentioned the word ruse. That's a great observation. You know, is this one of his great, you know, I'm going to hug Andy on the beach moments? I don't know. But it will be fun moving forward.
So, well, let me ask you this. We keep saying, or maybe I just keep saying, like, we've seen Kelly in this situation before where it comes down to the title and all the pressure's on him and that's when he performs. I'm now thinking, have we seen Kelly in this situation before? We've seen him go head-to-head with Andy Irons, was his greatest challenger, and we've seen him go head-to-head with Mick. But in this scenario, up until now, there was a lot of people contending for the title. And they're not contending for the title anymore, but honestly, they're worthy contenders in a heat at Pipeline. You know, if he draws Parco, or he lost to Kerr last year, I don't know that we've ever seen him in that situation before where it's like there's five or six guys who pose a serious threat to Kelly. And so is it enough for him to just be lackadaisical and show up late? You know, is that enough preparation? It has been in the past, but now there's guys who are ready to cut your throat, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I do know this. I don't think Kelly's looking at individual guys and five or six guys that he has to compete against. My feeling is Kelly's looking at, like, I got to win pipe. I know what I got to do to win pipe. I got to surf backdoor for the most part, unless there's lefts presenting themselves. But I'm just going to dominate both ways. I'll dominate backdoor and I'll dominate the left at pipe. And that's what I got to do. I got to win pipe. I've done it numerous times. I don't know. He must have seven or eight pipe titles, something ridiculous like that. And I just got to take care of my side of the street. Whatever happens on the other side of the street, I don't have control over it. So I'm just going to go out there and win pipe again. And I'm sure that that's, you know, his outlook on it. I don't think that he gives a crap about how Parco or Mick Fanning or anybody else, Jordy, any of these guys do.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's the only mentality you can have. But I also think that in the past, there was nobody mentally strong enough to have that same mindset. And I think that now there are, you know, I think even the Groms on tour, like Felipe and Gabriel, aren't threatened by Kelly. They'll go out there and just put together two nines against him, you know, whereas in the past people might've crumbled. And I don't think those guys are necessarily going to do well at pipe, but I do think, you know, Mick, I think Mick will.
You mentioned Pipeline.
Yeah.
Pipeline season ender.
Right.
This has been one of my pet peeves for a long time. This year's tour championship crowned at the final event of the year. But it was almost crowned before the final event of the year.
Right.
This has happened numerous times in ASP's history. Each time it is a letdown for you and for me. Should the world title be decided at Pipeline each and every year, no matter what, via a weighted point system?
I'm not bothered by it, to be honest. I know that you feel strongly about it. And I'm open to hear what your thoughts are on it, because if the world title ended in Portugal, that'd be okay with me and I'd still watch pipe. I prefer it to go to pipe, but I'm not bothered by it. I guess if there was another point system presented to me, you know, I'd totally be interested to hear what it was.
Here's my take.
Yeah.
There can be a weighted point system that makes sense. Okay. I don't have it in front of me. And I'll let the brilliant minds that know how to do that kind of thing do it.
Yeah.
But I know that there's enough brilliant minds in the world to make it so it makes sense, because it's already done in numerous sports. It's done in golf with the FedEx Cup. It's done in NASCAR. They always finish with a Sprint Cup thing where it's like comes down to the wire. And okay. So I know it can be done and I know it should be done, because this is our sports Super Bowl. This is the Pipeline Masters. And I think it's very important for the health of the ASP that that they have this thing be more than just the Pipeline Masters. This needs to be our Super Bowl. And there can be a weighted system that makes sense. It can be done. Again, I don't have the actual points model or paradigm or whatever, but I know it can be done.
So your concept would be that Pipeline is worth more points than any other event on tour.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And it might be a thing where you have to reshuffle the, like you put Kelly already into like round four.
Right.
And you know, and so you back weight it with the back half of the tour.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to that idea. I think maybe that's kind of what the goal of the Triple Crown is, where the Triple Crown as a whole is the Super Bowl, you know, but Pipe still
Triple Crown, the two different things. I mean, the Triple Crown, first of all, is not owned by the ASP, although it may be now. I don't know what sort of negotiations they have going on. But, and, you know, quite frankly, a lot of those guys don't do those first two events.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting for sure.
Pipeline.
So
am I going too fast for you? I'm just throwing it at you, dude.
Not at all.
The ASP dishes out pain on JOB. Jamie O'Brien and Ricardo Dos Santos got into some fisticuffs back in August during the Billabong trials at Tahiti. And the ASP has fined O'Brien $5,000 and will not allow Jamie O'Brien to surf in the Triple Crown events, including his beloved Pipe Masters, an event he's won. And he's won numerous events at Pipeline, many of the, you know, either the Monster Energy or whatever iteration of that event that they have, the Volcom, now it's the Volcom Pipe Pro.
Right.
O'Brien said, "I don't know, whatever, it's all good. Contests don't mean anything anyways. I hope the waves just drop. That's what I hope. I hope that everyone comes here for the Pipe Masters and the waves just suck." Is the ASP's fine too harsh?
No, I don't think it's too harsh. I think it's totally in line.
So fisticuffs means no Triple Crown, $5,000.
Yeah, well, let's get it clear. It was during the Billabong Pro trials, and apparently, my understanding was that the trials event isn't sanctioned by the ASP. So the ASP initially didn't comment on it. Why they've decided to get involved now, I'm curious about. But I still think that the punishment fits the crime, because to explain the situation, for some reason, we don't have video of it, even though I would assume the trials are filmed, but that film hasn't surfaced yet.
We need some Zapruder film to surface.
Well, I've read a lot of different people's accounts on it, but basically what happened was the heat was winding down. Jamie needed a score, but Ricardo had priority. So Ricardo took off. He needed like a three. Or I think Ricardo might have needed like a three to advance, but Jamie needed a score as well. So Ricardo took off with priority, deeper than Jamie. Jamie drops in on him. Ricardo's goofy foot, Jamie's regular foot. So they end up bottom turning, facing one another. Jamie throws what many say was a punch. Jamie says it was an open-handed slap. This humble commentator's opinion is it doesn't matter. But anyways, Jamie throws a blow, hits Ricardo in the face. They both fall at the bottom of the wave. They come up from the back of the wave. Ricardo paddles over, throws punches. Jamie throws punches, and they're fighting in the water. So that's the way the scenario went down. Had they gotten to a fight at a bar after the event, maybe the ASP, you know, maybe the punishment would be too strong. This was in the water during an event in a critical exchange. Completely unacceptable. Like, no two ways about it. So, yes, Jamie should be fined. Yes, he should be eliminated from some events. I think he got off kind of lightly. $5,000, three events. It should also be stated that Ricardo Dos Santos was fined. His fine was only $1,500, but the same suspension.
Let me ask you this. As a fan, do you feel let down that you don't get to see Jamie O'Brien in the Pipeline Masters? And I'll say one thing. If there's one guy that I know gets under Kelly's skin, it's Jamie O'Brien and Kalani Chapman. Both those guys, I think, bothered Kelly a little bit.
Heck no, I don't care if he's not in the event. I have been a big Jamie fan for years, but the last couple years, I've really fallen off the bandwagon. Number one, he hasn't performed in contests the way that he should. I think he's disrespectful of the lineup at Pipe. He notoriously burns people left and right. And to me, really, the clincher is all of his Jamie O'Brien 2.0 and 3.0 series that Red Bull sponsors that is on YouTube. They're 8 to 10 minute long episodic kind of mini series that they do with very little surfing and just a ton of...
World According to Jamie?
Yeah, totally. And it's stupid behavior. It's not even like funny to watch. You know, like I'm interested in surfing and I'm interested in Jamie O'Brien and it's hardly entertaining. And then there might be 2 minutes of surfing, and admittedly, he shreds, but it's like, dude, what is Red Bull doing footing the bill for this guy? You know, let's see him surf. So that's my feeling on it.
My feeling is that the fine's not too harsh. It's in the rule books. Jamie signed up for this, and you got to obey by the rules. And the rules are the rules. There's rules for a reason.
Here's another question I have to you is, what is the outlook for Ricardo Dos Santos going to surf pipe this winter?
It makes it very interesting, right? We're all going to be on heightened Ricardo watch as he strolls down the beach past Jamie's front yard.
He made cover shot last year at Pipe and Wave of the Winter.
It's certainly in the back of his head. You know, Jamie's more or less, I don't want to say threatened, but basically said, you know, good luck coming over here and surfing because, you know, everyone hates you more or less. You know, you better, you know, look over your shoulder type of thing, you know, whatever that means. Like, sort of like a veiled threat. Maybe that's too strong of a phrase. But he did say, hey man, you know what? He's got to come to my backyard and deal with my friends at my spot. So good luck to you.
You know, I feel that on the North Shore, certainly, it's kind of run by, you know, surfers and not necessarily like police type authority, but I do feel like there's, honor among the way that it's run. And I would really be surprised if the powers that be sided with Jamie on this scenario. The way I understood it fell out after the Tahiti punch-up was that the kind of enforcers back home in Hawaii reached out to Jamie and said, that was completely unacceptable. You need to go apologize. So they were the ones that pushed that to happen, which Jamie did apologize. There was a photo of it. I think Jamie posted it on Instagram with an apology towards Ricardo. And, you know, I don't know that he would have done that had the quote unquote enforcers back home not encouraged him to do so.
That's all very interesting. I didn't know any of that, David. And I'm interested to know where your sources are for that.
It's all hearsay. And it was all on Instagram for 12 hours, basically, the night that it happened. I happened to be up late watching it. And then Stab posted the article. And again, it's...
Well, there's a lot of backstory here. Because I also heard that Ricardo took one image of Jamie sort of bowing his head to Ricardo in sort of an act of submission and then said, see, Jamie O'Brien was in the wrong, you know, and that made Jamie get mad. Like, hey, you just took one photo of about 100 photos. I wasn't bowing my head. It just so happened that somebody took a picture right then when my head was bowed, but I wasn't like submitting to you. I'm just saying, look, you know, let's apologize together. There's a lot of, if anything, this is a classic case of social media sort of, you know, running amok for both of these guys, you know?
It's just hard to ignore the fact that Jamie threw the punch on a bottom turn on a wave. You know what I mean? It's kind of like whatever happens from that point on, you can't blame Ricardo for fighting back, first of all, but second of all, for being angry and posting his angry rant on social media.
Yeah, and I'm glad he did it. The more angry rants, the better. Keep them coming, despite the fines.
Completely. And to be honest, he retracted, or not retracted, but apologized for even doing that after the fact, which I thought was kind of a big move on his part. So I think he got better waves last winter that I saw in the media than Jamie did at Pipeline. And if he charges that hard and surfs that well, dude, I want to see him out there.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. My gut feeling is just the veiled threat that was put out there might be enough to just sort of temper Ricardo this year, and he might just not have the same presence that he had last year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Next up, Great White Tober. White Tober.
Did you come up with that title,
by the way? I did. Thank you very much. Nice. Yes, Great White Tober. Shark attack recently in Jay Bay, a gruesome one where the shark ate the body of the swimmer while a kayaker tried to stave the beast off. And in October, October 8th, Jay Scrivener was attacked, receiving 30 stitches, and considers himself very lucky. That happened up in Eureka, California. And there have been numerous great white sightings just in the last week in Malibu, at El Porto, in La Jolla. And this year, NOAA researchers determined that great white sharks make up a distinct genetic group that does not have a high risk of extinction, yet the state of California has said that maybe they are a possible endangered species, and that paves the way for yet another study. At what point, David, do we take great white sharks off of the endangered species list? These are apex predators. They seem to be showing up in mass, and I, for one, do not think that they are losing the battle.
No, I don't either. I think that they should be taken off the endangered species list. It's certainly a topic for scientists to determine, not for me.
No. We're the ones getting eaten. We are allowed to discuss this and opine with a certain amount of authority, even though we don't have scientific basis.
In that case, kill them all.
Kill them all.
Yeah. So there's a number of factors that determine whether or not a species should be put on the endangered species list. And
where do you come up with this stuff? You do way too much research.
I think that maybe the great whites fit that requirement at one point, which is why they were put on. Do they still meet that requirement? I don't think so. There's five factors, and you only need to meet one of the factors in order to be put on the list. But I'll just read the five factors. The first one is the present or threatened destruction, modification, or curtailment of its habitat or range.
That's not happening. Go ahead.
No. The second one is the overutilization for commercial, recreational, scientific, or educational purposes.
That's not happening.
The third is disease or predation.
We don't know.
Probably not.
Probably not.
The fourth one is inadequate existing regulatory mechanisms to protect it.
There's tons of those. Tons of requirements to protect.
And the last one is there are natural or man-made factors affecting its survival.
That's natural man-made factors affecting all of our survival.
Yeah, and so maybe there's an argument for that one, you know. But again, maybe in the past there was arguments for one or two of those points and they were put on the list for that reason. I would like to see what are the requirements for taking them off the list, because they don't seem to meet
them. How about this one?
Yeah.
That NOAA researchers determined that great white sharks make up a distinct genetic group that does not have a high risk of extinction. My problem with this is that you've got a federal agency and a state agency basically butting heads, and one's going, look, we've done tons of research, you give us tons of tax dollars to do so, we're telling you they're not going extinct, yet California State Parks has to go, well, we're not sure, let's do another study. To me, another study is like, let's just throw our tax dollars at some like bunch of scientists so they can keep their jobs.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be a good thing. I'm not against scientists losing their jobs, but how many studies do we have to do? And what's wrong with the NOAA study?
I agree that seems to be what's happening, but it's not that black and white. It seems that the scientists are the ones who are polarized. Like one study that's actually being used to push forward a lot of the legislation that was done says that there's as few as 219 great whites off the coast of California. The method for counting the sharks was that researchers lured great whites close to their boat by slowly pulling a fake seal. They identified 131 individual sharks by the distinctive patterns of nicks, notches, and scars on the trailing edge of their dorsal fins, and then used mathematical models to calculate the likely population, which seems ridiculous. And that's
completely ridiculous. They counted 131 with one seal.
Yes.
And they only come up with 219 total.
Well, they use mathematical models.
That's bull.
Right. Of course it is. And so there's a lot of criticism of the study, and there's a second study that's being done that calculates numbers to be as much as 2,000 great whites in the same area.
Yes.
So the one point that doesn't seem to be contested is what you said, that they make up a distinct genetic group that doesn't have a high risk of extinction. One scientist said that it's an uncontestable point, and that the uncontestable point is that the number of the population has grown more rapidly than any other example scientists have in marine life.
Ah, that's so interesting.
Yeah, whatever their genetic advantage is, they're able to populate more quickly and recover the species more quickly. So more work needs to be done. It's unfortunate that more money needs to be spent in order to do it.
I know that after the swimmer in Jay Bay was taken, that the surfers there were up in arms, and their basic feeling is, and based obviously in strong emotion, is, you know what, get rid of them all.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that's way too strong.
Yeah.
Now, the ASP, changing directions. the ASP announces its media deal, one that we knew was coming. The deal is with ESPN, YouTube, and Facebook across the linear broadcast, digital, and social media spectrums. That's marketing BS right there. The deal includes a highlight show of each tour stop on ESPN, and all events will be webcast off of the ASP YouTube channel. David, is an ASP highlight show on ESPN must-watch TV?
Sometimes. Cloudbreak this year, yes. Trestles this year, no. You know?
Why would you want to watch a highlights package when I know you and you are like me and many, many surf fans, we're going to watch the live webcast. Why would we watch the highlight show boiled down 2 weeks later?
Well, you're...
Why would you set your schedule to it?
You're talking about a very subgroup of hardcore surfers who is going to watch it and is going to watch Kelly's, you know, standing arm open barrel in Cloudbreak 10 times each. And we're going to watch Julian's alley-oop 10 times each right after it happens. So I think that there's another group of surfers who may watch the event live and then not watch it 10 times
but
each.
But will they click through it and happen to find it on TV, or will they schedule it and record it, the highlights package?
I'm thinking...
And is it just a stupid question?
But no, but the highlights package isn't necessarily going to be a one-off, like its own programming. Maybe it's part of SportsCenter. You know what I mean? Like if they incorporated...
We don't know that. Now, it could
no,
be,
we don't know anything.
But my gut feeling is it's going to be buried on like ESPNU or something.
The
like
Ocho.
ESPN XX, which is, you know, contact your cable subscriber.
Well, we don't know that. You know,
We don't.
They haven't really given that much information yet.
It was sort of a trick question.
Yeah.
Because I guess the deeper question for you is, are you looking forward to the new ASP webcast? Of course we are, right? Yeah. Let's see what it looks like. What are your thoughts on this press release that was spat out to us?
I like that all the events will be broadcast at the same URL. You know, like their different events don't have their own.
Did you take
site.
A look at the new ASP website?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
All right.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. What did you notice about the, say, 12 or 16 surfers that they had? They had mug shots of 12
yeah.
to 16 surfers on there. Was there something that stood out to you about those 12 to 16 surfers?
No, what stood out to you?
There was only one Brazilian, Adriano de Souza. One Brazilian. It was made up strictly of white guys.
Okay.
And I found that interesting. To me, it says, you know what, we're trying to sell this to North America.
Okay.
Now, maybe I'm wrong, but where's Gabe Medina? You would think Gabe Medina would be on there.
Like, well, maybe it was done by ranking.
It could be.
I don't know. Yeah,
I just noticed it. I looked at it and went, that's weird, you know. And even if it was, why wouldn't you mix it up? Why wouldn't you throw, like, you know, a cross-section of all of the geographic regions in your little, you know, your little 16, top 16 portraiture?
Yeah, interesting. I did see their mugshots. I didn't even make note of who was who. I just scrolled past it. But
What about the executive board? You can scroll down further and you can see the four or five guys that are on the executive board. What was your take on that they needed to have their pictures up there? My take on it was I was lucky enough to have dinner with Paul Speaker. He sat at a table that I was at, and super smart guy, and just really a talk about a great speaker and inspiring, and I'm confident that those guys are going to do everything they can to make it work. But when I saw those four or five guys, including Paul Speaker, I thought to myself, now that looks like a group of guys that ride stand-up paddleboards. That was my take on it.
This coming from a guy who rides a stand-up paddleboard?
I ride it all.
No, I agree with you in that, but good. I mean, not good that they ride stand-up paddleboards, but good that we have some real professionals in there, not just former pro surfers.
Right.
I think that's the direction it needs to go.
Yeah.
You know?
It's time.
But I didn't think much of it. I think it's nice. I actually liked it, I think. It's nice to have a little transparency. To
yeah.
see who's who
yeah.
and what their job requirements are, you know?
Well, the one guy I noticed was a big hitter at Visa. And all of the guys are big hitters. Like,
yeah.
this is not some lame board of, like you say, like, you know, ex-pro surfers that are like, yeah let's do this. So,
cool.
It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to what happens. Everybody is looking forward to 2014.
One more thought, though, on that media deal. I think, yes, it's great that we're going to be able to watch the event live and we're going to be able to do the heat analyzer. And there's a certain segment that's going to do that. But I do like that they're trying to make the highlights package available to the people who maybe are just marginally interested in surfing, you know? And so I think that's what's required to grow the sport to where it need, you know, to where sure. everybody would like to see big dollars coming in. And in order to do that, you got to just start easing society's exposure, easing sure. them into it.
Sure.
And that's probably what the highlights package will do.
It's like heroin. First one's free. Okay, how about Alley-Oop Gate? Julian Wilson boosted a ridiculous alley-oop during the Rip Curl Pro at Super Tubes last week. It immediately went viral in the comparisons to John Florence alley-oop at the Oakley Pro in Bali earlier this year began in earnest. Which alley-oop was better?
I've answered every of your questions first, so you answer. What do you think is better?
I think that John Florence's alley-oop was better in Bali. Now, Julian's, I think, was higher, but I'm sure that you've watched them both over and over and over again like I did. It's my gut feeling but after watching it, Julian did a couple of pumps, two or three pumps to set up the massive alley-oop, which I see as lost scoring potential.
There was a section that he could have almost done it on.
Yeah. Whereas John's was like basically one little fin check top turn and then down to the bottom and boosting. I do think Julian's was slightly larger, but I just think that John's was more, it had more flow, if you will, more use of the wave in the correct way that the wave needed to be utilized. Both of them were fantastic. Both of them were incredible. Julian landed a little bit more in the flats, looked more like a knee buckler. John's just a little cleaner.
That's an interesting point about him passing the section because I noticed it, but I didn't really take note of it. You know, now that you say it, you're like, I'm thinking you're right. That's something I've criticized Gabriel Medina for doing in the past.
Well, I agree. And I was thinking of you talking about Gabe, because to me, that's what this is going to come down to from a judging standpoint is, okay, look, let's say 5 years from now, everyone's busting airs, where it's going to be like, well, is he passing up scoreable potential to bust an air? Because if he is, then we're not going to judge the air as high. I think we're going to get to that place where it's like, if you're setting up your air way down the line and you're not utilizing the wave, you know, it's not going to score as high.
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree with you that John's was better. I think I had to watch it 10 times each before I could even tease apart what the difference was. My first instinct was that John's was better, but I wasn't sure why. So let me give you the results of my finding. So I think John's casual style is slightly better. I like that he landed in the transition of the wave, as you noted. I mean, it's like if it was a half pipe, you know, he landed right in the most critical part of the half pipe. Julian did kind of land in the flats, but he had a little bit of the falling lip to cushion his blow as well, or cushion his landing as well, which isn't his fault. That's the way the wave broke, but it made his job a little bit easier. More importantly, the biggest difference I think that a lot of people overlooked is that I feel like John Florence was more intentional in his rotation. Like he hits the lip and he pulls his left knee in and starts kicking with his back foot into the rotation. And so by the time he's at the pinnacle of the air, at the height of the air, he's already two-thirds rotated. Julian's air is kind of a more traditional alley-oop, the kind that we used to see Tim Curran doing in the 90s, which is lofting straight up into the air. And then when you're at the height of the air, doing the rest of the spin coming
down. Or letting the gravity kind of follow.
Correct. Right. Like if your fins were actually in the water and you're going backwards, it spins you around once you get that down momentum.
Right.
And that's the same momentum he's doing in air. It's like lofting into the air real high and then just spinning back around and landing. That's Julian's motion.
Right.
John's was a more like single motion kicker of a rotation, which is kind of next.
Can you do an aerial?
Not like that.
You have done an aerial.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I've never done an aerial.
Oh, okay.
So I want it to be noted for the podcast.
Sure enough.
This is awfully technical.
It's awfully technical. And again,
I've seen your credit card error, actually.
Yeah. Again, I needed to watch it 10 times to even figure that out, you know?
Yeah.
But
And even that is like, something tells me that I like the idea that, you know, according to you, Julian's was almost, there wasn't as much thought to put into it. It was just more like, here I go up in the air and here I come down. And you're telling me that John John's was almost like more thought put into his body mechanics to get the air to be completed.
Totally. Yeah. And to be honest, before I analyzed it, like the first time I saw the air, it looked like Julian was almost doing a kick out, like a big air kick out. I know he wasn't, and I know his intention was to land it, but the way that his body mechanics were was just a little bit more like that, like just lofty kick out kind of thing, and then slink it around and land it. John John's, again, was a more intentional rotation.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Huh. Interesting stuff. Speaking of rotations, Nat Young received the ASP Rookie of the Year Award. Congratulations to Nat. Now, Nat Young was in the running early on along with Hawaiian Sebastian Zietz, and Nat then ran away with it. He had a great rookie year with 2 second-place finishes, a third-place finish, and 2 ninth-place finishes. David, will Nat Young continue on this pace in 2014, or will there be a sophomore slump?
I think he will. It's easy to say and to get excited with the hype, and that's probably what I'm caught up with. You look back at Gabe Medina, and he hit a slump when nobody expected him to be able to hit a slump. But I don't know. I feel like Nat, he just has... Gabe's was raw talent that got him to where he was, and he was doing a lot of air maneuvers that we hadn't necessarily seen before, so it's fresh for the audience, which I think the scores reflected. Nat, on the other hand, is applying tried and true power surfing, which we've seen a million times before. He's just doing it better than anybody else, than any other goofy footer is doing it. So I don't see where he could fail, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't anticipate a sophomore slump, much for the reasons that you mentioned. Nat Young has been competing since he was like 12 years old or earlier. He's been doing this his whole life. He's proven that he's worthy on tour with the big dogs. He is a big dog. He's a very calm guy. He seems to have a very sort of level, you know, attitude towards everything. He's not big highs and big lows, which we saw out of Gabe Medina, either before or after heats, where he would certainly wear his emotions on his sleeve. So I think that steadying sort of capacity that Nat Young has is going to help him. And I only anticipate bigger and better things for Nat Young in his sophomore year. And I certainly look forward to continuing to have him on my team next year. He's done wonders for my fantasy. Without him, I would be in dead last instead of second to last.
Well, I'm the only guy who's behind you then. But I do like, I think what you just said, like his steady, even kind of mindset and has been reflected in his results. It is steady and it is calm, but it's high intensity. You know, like Mick Fanning's running at a 10 in terms of intensity right now, but there's been seasons where he's at a 6. I feel like Nat Young's at an 8, and because of his upbringing that you mentioned, he's able to sustain the 8 long term. You know, it's not like he's going to run out of gas by running at an 8 and going to need to drop down. He's just built to run at an 8. So
here's things to watch out for Nat. A new girlfriend in the picture.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, if there is. Oh, okay. If there's a new girlfriend in the picture. If his entourage next year grows crazy. If he gets a new sponsor where expectations change. Those are sort of things that, especially as a fantasy surfer player, to keep an eye on. That could potentially cause sophomore slumps. But if he keeps everything the way he has been doing it this year, as far as entourage, crew, management, sponsors, all of that stuff stays the same, things will be good for him. Now, let me ask you this. Nat Young, will he ever be the world champion?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would think that it would take a little bit more well-rounded surfing to become the world champ.
Has there ever been an American goofy foot world champion?
I don't think so.
CJ Hobgood.
Oh, yeah.
2001. It just came to me. That was the year that they abbreviated the season because of 9/11.
Yeah, good call.
Right? Was that? Yeah, 2001.
Yeah, it was.
Other than that, you would think Derek Ho, he's sort of Hawaiian. Is he, you know, is that American, Hawaiian? I don't know. And then I can't think of any other goofy foots.
Do you think Nat could be world champ?
I do. I think he's got it all. I think he can be the world champ. I mean, there's some great waves at great lefts. He kills it on rights. He's got a beautiful backhand.
He does airs.
He does them great. He's sort of got it all. It's just a matter of some of those things that I mentioned a minute ago, if these things cause distractions, then we have issues. But I think he has the mental makeup. You know, I look at mental makeup. Like, I look at Dane Reynolds, and I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, like, how much does that guy weigh now? Like,
right.
But he doesn't have the mental makeup to be a world champion. Yeah, he's a great free surfer, whatever. There's a million great free surfers that are going to come and nip at Dane Reynolds' heel sooner than he realizes, which is what John Florence did to Jamie O'Brien, quite frankly. Completely. Jamie sort of, like, was in this great space, and all of a sudden John just goes, guess what? I just grew, and I'm here.
Yeah, and
you sort of took the mojo, the pipeline mojo, away from Jamie.
Totally.
That I don't see that happening with Nat Young. I just think this guy is a polished professional. And again, he seems to have great parents, have been brought up right, like everything in line for him to win a world title.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I was surprised at how handily he took the Rookie of the Year title. Like, I would have thought Felipe Toledo, had I had to bet money at the beginning of the year, I might have bet a little bit more percentage on Felipe, you know? And then I like Seabass a lot, but I don't think he has the mental fortitude that you're talking about. But yeah, Nat just took it to him. So
tell me about your must-see moments. Do you have a must-see moment? Just one moment that you might recommend to the listeners, like, that they should watch.
Yeah, I like that question a lot. I think we should do that each episode.
Yes.
My must-see moment is Connor Coffin riding the Black Beauty at J-Bay in Highline.
Great take. That's a great movie. I watched it the other day. Very inspiring. My thing is with the Black Beauty is I'm not sure that's a real Black Beauty. I think he just put the black rails on one of his standard Channel Islands.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I was at Channel Islands a couple days ago, and they said yes, it was.
I don't care what they said.
And would you like to buy one?
Did you ask him who shaped it? I bet they told you Al Merrick shaped it.
No. No. The conversation was open, and we talked about Al too. And but what was interesting to me about that performance was he out-noxed Knox.
Oh, God, he looked so great. That was so inspiring. And there was a lot of great chatter, and Brad Gerlach chimed in a lot about it, and it was all right, spot on, you know. The lineage, you know, they were talking about the lineage. Gerlach was talking about the lineage on Facebook, from Richard Cram to Brad Gerlach to Connor Coffin, you know, because Brad does a lot of training with Connor and
Coach. Do you know if they're still working together?
I'm not so sure that they are.
Doesn't seem like
No, because Brad's like off in Japan and Bali all the time, and Connor's doing his own thing.
Yeah.
They probably, you know, hook up every once in a while, maybe after the season. You know, I really don't. Yeah. I don't have any insight there.
Well, so the video Highline, for those who haven't seen it, it's everywhere. When I watched it, it was after 24 hours and it had 35,000 views. So you can find it out there. It's an 18-minute surf video, which mainly features J-Bay. It's Connor Coffin, Parker Coffin, Tanner Gudauskas, and Taylor Knox. To me, the two performers were Tanner Gudauskas and Connor Coffin, but Connor, by far, surfs better than everybody. And he's riding the classic Channel Islands Black Beauty that Tom Curran made famous.
Presumably.
Presumably.
I'm calling BS on that.
But riding...
Because I used to own one of those. not that I can
see. How does it look different?
I just didn't look like the real deal.
Okay.
But I could be... Maybe I'm wrong. It's all just fun and games.
Taylor Knox barely got any clips in the video and looked like he was riding the wrong board throughout the thing. But Connor just rail to rail to rail, and it was just gorgeous.
Which is the best Gudauskas brother?
Tanner.
No doubt.
No
Tanner
doubt.
Is the best one.
His board looked a little big in that video. I have a question, though, about that. You said you watched it. I hesitated to watch it for 24 hours because it was 18 minutes long. Is 18 minutes too long for a web clip?
For that particular, here's how I'll answer that. Get rid of everything but Connor Coffin, and you've got a great clip. Just show me Connor.
Yeah.
That's all I need to see.
Right.
It's just Connor's rides, and I would have been happy.
Yeah.
The other stuff was cool, too.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know. But whatever the length of the video, if you just would have trimmed it down to just Connor, we would have been happy.
I was such a big fan of surf videos growing up, and for a long time, even web edits. I'm wondering if the medium has just gotten played out at this point, but I'm less interested to watch surf videos than ever before. And if it's more than 3 minutes, it's going to be tough for me to click play on it. The two that I've watched probably in the last 2 weeks were John Florence's.
I have not seen that. Again, is it? I did see that, actually.
There was Again, and then he just released a newer one called And Again. I watched Jordy Smith's Now a while back, too. But, you know, it's kind of like if the top guys and the top editors put together an A-plus clip, then I'll push.
You're only allowed to choose one in this proportion of the show. One must watch. You've mentioned about four must watch.
Those aren't must watches. This is just Connor Coffin, Highline.
Must watch, which isn't a must watch.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my must watch.
Yes.
It's called Searching for Sugar Man, and it's a documentary film that won the Academy Award last year. Searching for Sugar Man, you're going to want to watch that movie. Now, my flick that isn't a must watch, but I want to tell you about, that I watched recently and was, I just came across it on Facebook, was a Clay Marzo clip. I don't even know what it was called. I don't even know if it's new. But it's Clay Marzo and Western Oz and...
Trunking It.
You're Trunking It. And he's an incredible free surfer.
Yeah.
Incredible surfer.
Sponsorless.
Good.
Yeah. Clay rips. Clay, the barrels... My only issue with Clay is that up until this West Oz kind of jaunt, which I guess he's dating a girl out there, and the reason why he's been spending time out there... He really only spent time in Maui surfing the same type of wave, and he surfed it better than anybody ever has or probably ever will, taking off on closeouts, getting super barreled forever, and then doing his patented layback crazy turn that he does. He's the best at it, but I've seen it probably 300 times, that layback.
Boring.
Even within the space of one edit, they'll show it 30 times. Different versions of it.
Yeah, it is incredible, especially the one version where it turns into this one-footed thing where he's just got his back foot on and somehow he has the board find his other...
His front foot on.
Is it his front foot? Yeah. Anyway, you're right. You know, after 3 minutes of Clay Marzo, maybe 3 minutes is the limit on any video.
And I saw that you posted that video on Facebook and I honestly didn't click play because I know exactly what it's going to be.
Yeah.
But let's go back Searching for Sugar Man.
Yes.
I did watch it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I watched it before the Academy Awards last year, recommended it to everybody.
Yeah.
It ties into something else that I'm doing right now. I just interviewed Sean Thompson last week on his new book that he released.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be posting that episode a week from today, next Monday, October 28th. And I'm using one of Rodriguez is the feature guy.
Yeah, the character, the main guy in that movie.
In Searching for Sugar Man. And so I'm using one of his songs in the Sean Thompson piece because I've loved the song. It's my favorite Rodriguez song.
Which one is it?
It's called Crucify Your Mind.
Okay, cool.
It's one of my favorite Rodriguez's songs, period. And I've always wanted to use it for something and it just never had a place. And the Sean Thompson thing, the mood lends itself so well to the Sean Thompson interview. But Sean Thompson's also from South Africa, which is where the movie takes place.
That's right.
So there's extra attachment to it. But side note, man, the Sean Thompson interview, I am so happy with.
Yeah, we're looking forward to hearing that. That's going to be good.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. He really... the book is interesting, and we cover the book, but he just... delivers such insight and thought behind everything that he says, you feel kind of like you're in the presence of greatness, you know?
Well, you are. He's a great person.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm glad that you got to hook up with him. I'm going to be doing some things with Sean in the future too, and I'm looking forward to it.
Sweet.
Now, I do want to mention this. You can join Pennywise, the band Pennywise, for a special Surfrider benefit dinner, concert, and live auction, and that's November 15th at St. Rock in Hermosa Beach. So I know we have listeners around the world, but if you're in Southern California in the South Bay of Los Angeles, Pennywise, a large Surfrider benefit dinner, concert, and auction, November 15th, again, at St. Rock. And you can go to St. Rock with an E, SaintRocke.com to get tickets and find out more information about that great benefit for the Surf Rider Foundation. Now, David, we're going to end with this. Your best song. What's the best song ever? And don't tell me you can't narrow it down to just... I need to know the best song ever.
Best song ever. Period.
Damn straight.
Not in a surf video, not...
Whatever. Just the best song ever.
Dude, I'm going to go... Oh, I hate answering this question. I spent more time... prepping for this question than I did for all the others combined. You lead off.
Okay, here's the best song ever. I'm going to play a little bit of it for you. I'm, as you know, a big fan of the Allman Brothers, and it's my contention that this is the best song ever. Just take it in for a minute, okay? Just
I'm listening.
I can see you're just cringing.
So
I got to take you to the lead, though.
Break it down. What? Why is it the best ever?
I'll tell you why. Just listen to this. We got to get to the lead. Here we go. Here we go. This lead guitar. Maybe it's because I was brought up by the Allman Brothers.
Yeah.
You know, late 70s, surfing. Single fin, whiteboard, black wetsuit.
Is this song in a surf video?
I've made one that has this song in it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bootleg.
Sure. So it's a great song. Allman Brothers are fantastic.
I'm going to go ahead and turn this off.
So my thought...
Blue Sky by the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, Blue Sky. And I like that it's a kind of deeper cut from the Allman Brothers too, you know? Like Midnight Rider or Jessica or something, I might have... expected, but that's a deeper cut and it's really good.
That's the best song ever.
It's a great song.
No. Just say it. Say best song ever.
I'm not gonna say it because I have my own opinion on this situation.
Fair enough.
Don't look.
What do you got, Devo?
I'm not gonna let you cheat.
I'm just wondering what you got. How old are you? Let me ask you this.
32. Just turned 32.
32. So I'm just gonna.
81.
This is from 81.
No, I'm from 81.
Oh. I have no idea what.
Okay,
we're gonna
so check it out.
Devo.
No, it's not Devo. Check it out. You say. Best song ever. I feel like there's a lot of songs I like that I want to listen to, but when you say best song ever, it's like, well, now I got to choose something that is, like, would be technically proficient to play or took a genius to write, or it's probably got to be classical or something like that, because those songs are actually better. Like, if I had to only listen to one song for the rest of my life, it'd probably be something classical or jazz.
Oh, well, then that's the best song ever.
Something intellectual.
You have not proved that this is the best song
ever. Well, you just pick 70s rock, and I have something that can compete with that.
But mine's the best song ever.
No, this. I'm a huge fan of the Kinks.
Oh, interesting.
And so I'm going to present you with, from Lola versus the Power Man, Strangers. So,
all right,
a little bit slower, different pace. Doesn't have the radical.
I like that you two chose something sort of deep in the vault.
Yes, but doesn't have the radical guitar riffs that the Allman Brothers are capable of. But the Kinks, English band, in my opinion, as good as
Can
the
I just
Beatles.
Say one thing?
What?
As good as the Beatles? Did you just say that again?
Said it out loud, dude.
Oh my God.
The Kinks,
as good as the Beatles. Did you hear that, folks?
The Beatles.
He just discredited himself.
No. I love the Beatles, but I think they're a little bit overrated. Kinks, a little bit underrated.
All right.
We meet in the middle.
Fair enough.
Okay. What you got?
Best song ever. We'll do this again next time.
Okay.
There'll be another best song ever.
All right.
That's all we've got for today, unless you've got something else, because I got to run.
No.
All right.
I'm good.
So you can email Scott at surftalksandiego@gmail.com. And you can email David Lee Scales at...
hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com.
And I'm on Twitter at Boardroom Show. And you're on Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram at Surf Splendor. And then you could search Surf Splendor on Facebook too. We do like a profile show every other Monday, essentially. And this upcoming Monday, of course, is the interview with Sean Thompson. So last week was with Robert August and Charlie Smith in Maui. So
cool. All right. Well, SurfSplendorPodcast.com and DownTheLineRadio.com. Until next week, adios and aloha.
Thanks. I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. You can continue this conversation on our website in the comments section, where we also have links to everything that we discussed in this show. Or you can continue the conversation on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, where you can find us at Surf Splendor. If you listen to Surf Splendor on iTunes or Stitcher, please rate the show and leave a comment. It helps grow the show, and it helps others to find it. Click the subscribe button on iTunes and Stitcher, and all future episodes will automatically be downloaded to your device. Also, we have an internship available for an associate producer. If you love surfing and storytelling, go to our website, SurfSplendorPodcast.com, and send us your resume. It's a great opportunity to meet legends of our sport. We're also really excited about the launch of our episode with Sean Thompson on Monday, October 28th. So please don't miss that episode. This is David Scales saying thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode of Surf Splendor.